Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with the one and only Lewis Black, who's coming to Warner Theater from May 17th through the 19th. Thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what we do.
part of the deal.
It's part of the deal.
Part of the deal.
If somebody could figure out how to advertise things again, it would be really great. That doesn't seem, you see, you have to go and really go to every possible place you can possibly go. It would be 20 years ago if you went on, if you went on the WTOP radio 20 years ago, everybody go, wow, And now it's like, just, because it's so fragmented, it's like, you just got to try to find all the ways you can to get to people, because I'll show up in a town, I'll show up in a smaller town where there's really nothing going on,
right?
And be walking down the street, and this sign on the theater has my name, and people will look at me and say, "What are you doing here?"
It's a coincidence.
Yeah, I just happened to be. I'm sightseeing.
You were sightseeing and saw your own name and thought you'd go check out your own show.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to get the word out on this, I promise. It's called the Jokes on Us Tour. Obviously, I have some ideas on what that refers to, but what do you mean by that? Why is the joke on all of us these days?
Well, it's kind of like I keep trying to come up with titles that describe somewhat where we're at, and we've kind of reached that point, then you turn on the TV, and I don't care what side you're on, you just kind of look and go, wow. And it's hard. It's like the joke's already been written.
You just have to say what's going on in the news, and it's already funny.
It is. I mean, it's like if it's not one thing, it's another thing. And then if it's not another thing, it's another thing. And then when you try to top it, somebody tops it for you.
Yeah. Truth, if you truth, stranger in fiction.
Yeah, no. So it is, it's what it when you read it. I've got the poster that really I have out for this thing is, the Jokes on Us Tour, President renders comics obsolete.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, you seriously have no shortage of material. We have porn star settlements. We have Russian interference and investigations. And what topics do you tackle during the show?
Well, it always depends, somewhat on what's happened that day. And then, I do tackle healthcare, because I was sick last summer, and I was in a hospital, which is in Ireland, which is, they're always screaming about, boy, those kind of healthcare systems, ours is the best. Well, no, okay?
Yeah.
And we're yelling about it, and most people have never been to the others, okay?
Right, right.
And they have the same equipment, you schmuck. So, I talk about that a bit. I talk about the tax stuff. I talk about why it's difficult. What we were just talking about, why it's difficult to be funny, in part, about this stuff. And how come, because I've been, I was born and raised, I've moved to New York 40 years ago and started making jokes about him. And I've been making jokes about him for 40 years, and I'm tired of it.
How does that work? That's a good point. So you've been cracking jokes on the same subject matter, the same public figure for those, that long. How has that sort of evolved? I mean, like, you don't want to tap into the same material over and over again, but as he continues to rise, you have more to work with.
Well, yeah, but he also gives you the stuff. Those tweets, yeah. Really, it's like, I've said it before. Every so often, there's one tweet in particular that I'll read, that I realized early on, you turned on the news and they were reading the tweets. And first off, it's not news.
Right.
Okay. He's talking to to those who were, who voted for him. That's who he's talking to. So this isn't news. So, I don't need somebody to tell me what it is that he said. You don't need to read it for me. I can read. You don't need to have people discussing what it meant. I can pretty much see what it meant, and you're taking away my job.
Let me read it.
My job is, if it's something about, you know, okay, three Americans are coming back from North Korea. That's one thing. That's kind of at least in the news area.
Right.
You know, but if you, you know, if you're calling, you know, if you've got if you're proclaiming stuff about how somebody looks, or that you know, Mexicans are, you know, are eating all the avocados, and we can't let them across the border anymore. Whatever it is, you know, I get to read that stuff because a lot of what he writes is not policy; it's pathology.
Right.
And that's what I did. And what irritates me no end is some of the audience members will get upset about that I treated, you know, him in the fact that there's a pathology going on. Well, there's anybody elected to that office, there's a pathology going on, and that's my job. That's part of my job. Do I want to do that all the time? No, but they all show up with some sort of idiocy.
Right.
Every one of them has in my lifetime. I've talked about each and every one of them, but the constant is Congress, where in the last 25 years, because they've really shown that there are 12,000 ways for us to get nothing done.
Seriously. It almost doesn't matter who's in there and who's in control.
Yeah, and I'm tired of it. You know, don't tell me what the other side did while you were, when you didn't have power. I'm sick of it. I don't care. Just be like, okay, that's done. We can move on now. Your job is not, your agenda is not the most important thing on earth. What is important is your agenda and the other agenda, and finding between them a third agenda that somehow uses a bit of each agenda. That's the deal. Everything else is nonsense.
Right. Well, and you know what you're talking about, because you grew up around here, around the whole political scene. Graduated, you were born in D.C., grew up in Silver Spring, Springbrook High School. How's it changed around here since, just even when you come back to visit D.C., like just looking around, how much has the whole landscape changed?
Well, I mean, it's changed by nature. The Silver Spring is a different place. When I was there, there was nothing there.
Yeah,
now
yeah.
It's like they discovered oil somewhere. I mean, a lot of it has to do with, it's why it's so insane that these idiots who are in Congress don't get the concept of how important public transportation is, because, you know, granted, I know from, you know, all the readings that, you know, the subways are in disarray now, apparently, in the city. But the fact is that, you know, Bethesda changed. All of these places changed once those stops were put in. All of them.
Yeah, definitely.
They all became destinations. How these morons missed that is beyond me, but they've always missed it. They lived, that Congress sat for years. One of the big things for me was always is that the Washington Post would have this picture every year or so of, the slums that were, the area behind Congress, which was some of the worst. They would say, here are the worst slums in the world. And they were spitting distance from Congress. They're looking at them every day, and they did nothing. I mean, it's just beyond, it's like nothing penetrates them.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, no, it's like they're wearing, you know, they all have like metal in their heads.
What was it, a Christmas Vacation or something? There was a line, I think Randy Quaid had the metal in his head, and he said, "It's great, but every time my wife turns the microwave on, I piss myself and forget who I am for half an hour." Whenever you said that, that's for sure. All right, let's bring it back around. I know you graduated Springbrook, and I know, I think you initially wanted to be a playwright or a theater teacher.
Right, yeah.
And you kind of fell into stand-up comedy later in life than a lot of people. I think you were about 40. How'd that actually happen?
Well, it happened because I realized I couldn't be I couldn't be broke for my whole life. So it boiled down to that. It was kind of something I was doing on the side, and then I was running this room in New York City with some other guys, and we were doing a lot of theater in there. A little 100-seater that's still there called the West Bank Cafe, uh-huh. And I was working there starting in my early 30s, and it was going. And we were having a ball, and we were producing people like, Aaron Sorkin, Alan Ball,
wow.
Some really, there are others, there's a whole list of folks whose work was done there, and actors, and I would open every show. I'd be the host, you know, an MC, and say what was coming up and talk about stuff, and then all of a sudden, that people started paying attention to that.
That's funny. You said that's funny. You went into stand up not to be broke. I mean, that's
yeah, yeah. Because all of a sudden, that was, you know, they were attracted. You know, people said, you know, you want to come over. There's a place called Catch a Rising Star at that point, mm-hmm. and you want to come on over here and do your stuff. And I was like, guys, I don't know. And then I was kind of doing it on the side. So I tried it initially when I got to New York, and it didn't work out. And I would do shows on my own and. And then they called, so I went over, and then I started, you know, I started working over there, and the people were, it was, Kevin Meaney, really great, the late, great Kevin Meaney, and, Mario Cantone, Dennis Leary,
wow.
Rosie O'Donnell, me, that was generally the lineup.
Nice.
And I started working within that lineup, and I learned a lot from those guys.
I bet. What? How did you actually settle in on your? You know, so you're just testing out the stuff. You're learning from these guys. How do you? When about did you settle in on your? You know, your current style of sort of the angry rants and the gritting teeth and the pointing the finger. Like, when did that sort of coalesce?
All of that followed from just yelling. Everything else I wasn't conscious of doing until people pointed it out. I'd never really. It'd been that I'm still not very conscious physically of what I'm doing, except from time to time, and then I go, "Oh wow, I can't believe I'm doing this." But I was a friend of mine, another comic, a friend of mine who's a friend of the opening act, who's going to be with me in D.C., who's been working with me for years, John Bowman, and his friend Dan Ballard came up to me after I'd done a set downstairs at the club that we had in New York, the West Bank, and said, you know, God, you know, you're angry. He said, you should be yelling this stuff. He said, I'm yelling my entire act. I'm not even angry. You're the one who should be yelling. I need you to, so when you go back on stage, start yelling. And I did, and it was like, okay, here we go. That was it.
Wow. So it's
hard to find. That comic persona that people is, that's the tough part.
So it's a legit anger. You just play it up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean it's a legit. It starts as anger, but you can't really be really angry,
right?
Or people just leave. But from time to time, I'll point it out. I'll find myself standing there yelling and screaming about something, and then I'll have to go to the audience. I'm sorry, I've gone too far.
Well, it's worked out. I mean, it's been an awesome little brand. I mean, literally, a million kids are going to know you as Anger in Inside Out.
Yeah.
memories of working with that whole vocal cast. I'm sure you guys aren't all in the same room on those animated
projects. None of us were. Yeah. I mean, I think Amy and the late Gus Smith, Lois, not, what's her name? God.
Yeah.
Phyllis.
Phyllis from The Office. Yeah.
Yeah, Phyllis. Phyllis and Amy may have worked together. I think because of they had a lot of stuff. The rest of us that I knew of, we were all doing it at different times.
But what about what is that? What do you think? What's that like to know that a bunch of kids are going to know you as the fire flaming out of your head? And but also the movie's pretty deep. I mean, it kind of breaks down our mental processes in a lot of ways. And I'd like to see how that's applied to Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yes, yeah, it'd be nice. Well, I mean, you know, the thing that, you know, they kind of go, you know, you're, it's one of the things that's kind of like, we're not going to pay as much because you're going to be immortal. So, you know, it's like, well, you know, the jury's still out. But I was really thrilled because of what you said. It's a, you know, it took me, I say, but, you know, it took my generation, I don't think even knew it had emotions until we were into our late 30s, you know. It was mostly like, I'm hungry, you know, or I've got to take a pee.
Right.
And that was it. And then, but to be like, and parents have said it to me, you know, that their kid will go, you know, that the kid now has some sense of what they're feeling. We never had that.
Right. That's true.
And it's huge. And it's huge to know it early on.
Well, if maybe,
as opposed to me spending the last 20 years seeing a shrink about it.
Yeah, you could have watched it as a kid in animation.
Yeah.
Well, if they ever do a sequel, maybe you can play Hunger or Pee. You know,
yeah, exactly. I can certainly play either very well.
You had a lot of practice.
Yes.
He's like, I had both during this interview. Before you run, I got to ask you about, because I think when I first discovered you was on all those Daily Show segments, Back in Black. I know you did it with John, and I think, you've continued it with Trevor Noah.
Yeah, I'm still on.
How much did you enjoy, first of all, how did that come about? Did Stewart contact you? Did he see you on the stand-up scene?
No, I started with Kilbourne.
From the beginning?
From the very beginning.
Oh, wow. Well, what do you think the legacy of those segments is going to be? I mean, I love it's like a little, it's like your stand-up act, but in miniature, you know?
Yeah, I don't really know what the legacy, some of them are pretty, I think, have some legs and can be around, you know. A lot of them are just throwaways, apply to the week we were in, and that's good, but,
right.
You know, but as a comic, you know, it was like, especially early on, and I was touring the country, it was like having an advertisement on.
True.
TV every week, you know, here's my 3 minutes.
The one that really lodged in my brain was Glenn Beck has Nazi Tourette's.
Yeah.
That was a great one.
Yeah, no, that was a good one. It's just been a lot of fun to do it. I mean, and to continue to do it is really great. You know, I don't know how much longer, as long as they, you know, want me. And it's nice to be, you know, it's me and a, now it's like I started, there's a kid, and now it's me and a bunch of kids.
Definitely. I think the last time you were here, or at least the last time we talked to you on TOP, was with, you were coming to Warner Theater with, it was the late Dick Gregory and Tom Smothers. And I think DC was lucky that we got to see him before he passed.
He was great. It was great to be able to stand off stage and watch him and spend a little time with him. Because, you know, I keep forgetting, people say, who are your influences? And I constantly keep forgetting to say his name just because I'm so used to saying da 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 da, but he really was a huge influence. Probably I don't say it because I don't think I ever really have felt that as someone who does what people describe sometimes as, you know, socially relevant humor. I don't think I ever reached the levels he reached. He was profound.
Awesome. Well, bringing it back around to this year's tour, Jokes on Us. Why should our listeners come out?
Because I desperately need the money. No, I think if you've been spending the year losing your mind, it's nice to be in a room filled with people who have all lost their minds this year and laugh and weep about it.
It's cathartic in a way.
I think so. I think it's like going to a psychotic church service.
You should put that on your posters.
That'll be next. That'll be next one. That'll be the next one when I really start to make the Church of Psychosis.
The future star of Hunger and Pee. There you go. There you go. The next poster writes itself. All right, Lewis Black, thank you. You've been more than generous with your time. Thank you so much. Again, everybody, Warner Theater, May 17th through the 19th. Thank you, sir.
Yep. It'll be great. It's and I'll tell you the other reason to come out I'm really comfortable in that space. You know, we did a really, I think one of my best specials was done there. And the Red, White, and Screwed we did. And it's just a great space to work in. It's terrific. So I look forward to it.
Well, we love to have you back on your hometown station of TOP. I'm sure you grew up listening to it.
So. I did, and it's been a pleasure. And thank you for the time.
All right. Thank you, sir.